You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend. Yes, you are. I'm Patrick and she's Tracy. Tracy, we haven't talked in person in like 2 weeks. How's things going?
It's going. You know, things are fine. My kids are now fully in the state where school has been out for long enough that they've turned feral. So, you know, there's a lot of having to remind them that people do things like waking up before noon and wearing pants. So, you know, just the little baby steps that you take towards attempting to maintain civilization.
So I talk about Beyond the Trope quite a bit because they're local to me and they're good friends. And Michelle over at Beyond the Trope posted something that she had a delivery come and she was horrified because she met the delivery person basically, you know, in her pandemic pants and a t-shirt. And I'm like, I haven't, unless I've been forced to, I haven't put on real pants in 90 days. It's been PJs almost every single day.
I tried for like the first 2 weeks that I was teaching from home when we kind of made the rapid conversion and all of that to like put on my grown people clothes and like actually like put on my face in the mornings and all of that. And it just didn't last. And honestly, it just didn't last because I realized how much, as one of those women who likes to refer to herself as low maintenance, how much even in my lowest low maintenance mode, it still like takes time to do those things. And I was like, who's got time, man? Because the whole business of now everybody's magically got time in the middle of the pandemic, we've realized actually kind of isn't true because time means nothing and is wibbly wobbly and makes no sense. But this week there was a hardcover release of a book I'm super excited about and lots of other people are super excited about. And we've got the author here.
Yes, we do. Nick, why don't you say who you are and what you do?
Hi, I'm Nick Martel. Thanks for having me. I'm the author of The Kingdom of Liars. And, you know, my book just came out on June 23rd. I like it, so hopefully others will too. And it's, I guess the official pitch of it is it's set in a city where magic costs memories to use, and a disgraced noble has to determine whether his father killed the child prince.
And is this your debut novel?
Yes, this is my debut.
Very interesting, because I'm curious, and you're the wrong person to ask, but I want to ask someone at some point, like, what's the difference between a quote unquote normal book launch and a quote unquote pandemic book launch?
Yeah, that would be quite a thing.
That would be, but it's exciting still. I mean, you've got your book out there. Why don't you tell folks, like, what's your experience been so far as launching the book, like with your publisher? Have they changed plans at all that you know of, or are they just like moving forward as normal?
That's a great question. Well, it's been a lot of, from what I've seen on my end, a lot of like constantly adjusting things. There was a point at one point where the initial release for the book was supposed to be May 5th. And for various reasons, it got pushed back to June 23rd because of all the pandemic and the COVID-19 related issues. And there was a point for a week and a half, I didn't actually know when my book was coming out. They just told me, hey, it's getting delayed. We're going to let you know once we do. And let me just say it was stressful.
Gotta be stressful.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't a fun week and a half. And my agent, I was like, look, I'm going to tell you this. You're going to be upset, but it's better that you know. It's getting delayed. We don't know when. I'm going to let you know when I do. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, it's been really hard to tell what's normal, what's not normal. There have been things like, hey, I can't get into bookstores as easily, obviously. There have been things I've been able to see around me that I went to a Barnes & Noble on June 23rd. I'd actually hold my book for the first time just because of all the shipping things. Have been kind of like delayed.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to someone there, they found out this was my book and they were like, oh, this is so exciting. And then they were telling me like, yeah, we only actually have one in stock right now, but we have more on the way. And like all of Barnes & Nobles and these places are getting really backed up because, you know, we were in pandemic for like 3-4 months mm-hmm. before these stores started opening. So they're like, we have hundreds of books that are all coming in and we're trying to get them in as fast as we can. And It's been interesting. Let me just say that. Stressful, yeah. Interesting, and constantly kind of adjusting and being like, all right, this is what's happening. How do I make the best out of this situation?
But be honest, that moment when you're holding that book in your hands for the first time, that's like super exciting.
It was beyond exciting, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments where, we had found out the local Barnes & Noble didn't have it in stock yet. And my partner was like, hey, let's go a little bit out of the way and we'll get your book. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be a hassle. And they were like, no, we're going. And they very much pushed me like, we're going to go do this. I'm going to go buy it right now.
Good.
So, yes. she did the best thing possible where she was like, no, your book came out. We're going to go find it.
Yes. End
of discussion.
You also know that you have a solid partner because there wasn't a, and when do I get my free one?
Yes. I like this person. I like this person immensely right now.
Yes.
Yeah. She was a rock star throughout the entire thing. And she, you know, turned a day where I was like, oh man, I'm happy for my book to be out, but like, I don't have a copy of it yet because it's still in transit. Mm-hmm. Into a day where I was like, wow, I get to see it in like on the bookshelf in person. And it was a really cool moment where I got to like turn a corner and I was like, oh, that's my book. Like it's on the shelf right there. But it was great. She was great. And it's, like I said, it's been an adventure releasing during the pandemic, if anything.
That's amazing.
The nearest, I don't know, calling it an equivalency is like the wrong word, but the nearest similarity I can think to something that was super disruptive to people's book buying habits, consciousness of books, having them on their radars in any way as the pandemic has been, was in November of 2016, the American election. Yeah. There, of course, elections happen on Tuesdays and new books release on Tuesdays. And so all the books that came out the week of the election itself and the week that followed, and frankly, all of December and November of that year in 2016, they really took a hit. And I remember very vividly Mary Robinette Cole, who had her book Ghost Talkers came out the week of, I believe it came out the day of election. And so she went online to the Twitterverse and said, like, it may not surprise you to know that it was not a great day for sales. And my concern is that it won't be. And so she just made this giant thread and said, if you've got a book that came out in this period of time, come here and shout about it so I can do something to try and get us all some traction. But it's so different because I think at that point, people's consciousness was colonized by this feeling of upheaval about their political expectations, whereas this is a very literal upheaval of like where people are physically going and what's even physically available.
Yeah, and I remember I actually went back and read those posts around the time just because I was like, all right, this is the biggest disruption in kind of like, I guess, our like normal lives we've seen in a bit. Mm-hmm. And that was actually comforted me a lot. And, you know, I love my agent, but my agent was very blunt with me. And he's like, look, I don't know what's going to be happening. I don't know what sales are good right now. I don't know if people are going to be buying books.
Yeah.
And it was a giant question mark. It still is. And even my editors are very clear. Like we think we are doing the best possible, but it is kind of like a
territory. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, no, it's. Actually, I'm sorry, Tracy, but you brought to mind something like, why is it always Tuesday? Why is everything always on Tuesday? So you just talked about books release on Tuesday, elections are held on Tuesday, patch day for software is almost always on Tuesday.
Well, but there's like, other things too, like new movies drop on Thursdays, new albums drop on Wednesdays. Like every industry kind of has a territory it stakes out, and I assume that if I could talk to, I don't know, representatives of these various industries, there might be some like underlying logic of it beyond it just being some kind of organizational tradition. I don't know if Tuesday drops for my theory, and this is 100% me making up crap. So I'm
you got a theory, it. Some kid is dreaming, and we're exactly. All fucking tried as a brother. Wacky ballet,
man. Yeah. So I'm going to say it with great confidence and pretend it's true until somebody, we need to be like a call-in podcast or something so someone can set me right.
No, I did that already. We don't want to do that.
Oh, no, never mind. Never mind. We are not a call-in podcast. Don't. You are.
We tried that. We tried that with voicemails.
That's my second bad idea of today. So what I was going to say is it may be because of the bestseller lists and them wanting to be able to process sales through a weekend and on Monday so that they can publish out the bestseller list. I don't know. Who knows, man? It's all crazy talk. But I know exactly what you mean, Nick, when you say that your agent is giving you the best information he's got. We're actually from the same agency, you and I both. So hi, brother. And it is a very weird place where I think everyone's kind of off their footing. Like, we're used to hearing as authors, like, well, things are kind of slow right now in SF because, well, it's adult SF. It's always kind of slow. But when the people who are used to things being slow are like, no, it's slow, or no, it's strange, then I think it makes all of our spider sense tingle in a very different way.
Yeah, especially since publishing is always something where, at least in my opinion, from the limited I've seen, it's kind of like I'm always getting as much information as I think I can get. And you sometimes you're like, oh, you hope for more information. Like, I want to know what's going on behind the scenes. But we don't always get that information as authors. We kind of just get the information that's relevant to us. And it's interesting. Like, I always want to know more, but sometimes that information is kind of almost too much at times, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Now, I think writers in the publishing world are a little bit like, and this may be even worse because, again, literal isolation through pandemic, we're a little bit like animals that have been kenneled a little bit too long. Like in our own intellectual space and in our own concern space, and like we start gnawing at our paws and we start pulling out our own fur, not because we like it, but because it's something to do. And yeah. I think when our work is on submission, when we are not hearing anything back because there's nothing to hear, you know, we start doing things like trawling around and going like, well, is someone subtweeting something which is useful to me? Am I seeing ripples on the interwebs? And I think one of the best favors that our community of writers can sometimes do for us is when we nudge each other and go, please don't. Like, no, just, how about you go and do a fresh air or do a food or, you know, something along those lines.
Do a food. Yes. Yeah, yes. Go out and do a food, people.
Don't mock my discourse, Hester. Okay, on the subject of discourse, I have to know, because I saw this and I went, Aru, this is absolutely something I have to talk to Nick about. Talk to me about working on an organic farm in Ireland, she said, formerly having lived in Ireland and desperately wanting to know.
Yeah, sure. So right around the time I graduated college, I didn't know what I wanted to do next. I was very...
No!
I know, right? Completely unbelievable. I was pretty much in the state of like, all right, I got to figure out what I want to do. I don't really know what I want to do. And a few of my friends were in the same place. And we kind of came to this conclusion. We're like, oh, we can go travel. But to no one's surprise, we were more or less kind of broke. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we could do one of those, like, you know, grand trips around the world or anything.
So we started looking at Grand Tour. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we started looking into ways to kind of maybe travel for cheaper. And one of my friends is huge into like organic farming, and they're into like more sustainable things. They were a part of our university's kind of like, they helped like implement a garden. They like were they're one of the more sciencey people who did more environmental things. So they had heard of this organization called Worldwide Organic Farming, pretty much help. It's called Woofing. Mm-hmm. So it pairs volunteers with farms that need more help. So in turn for room and board and food, essentially, you work on the farms. So we were like, all right, let's do that. Like, we can go learn some things about like organic farming. We can learn kind of see the countryside of a place that we weren't going to go to. And then one of my friends was like, I want to go to Ireland. So it's like, all right, we'll go to Ireland to do organic farming there. And we reached out to a bunch of farms. One of them said, yep, come here. We'll take you for a month. And we went. And I spent the entire time going around Ireland for a bit before and after. And then I worked on a farm.
So this is like 21st century indentured servitude meets tourism.
Yeah, it kind of was that. Like, we got the weekends off, and, you know, it was nice to kind of be like, this farm at the time was very much like up and coming, so they were working on getting more organic means into it. So we got to like help them out, which I, you know, is always good to kind of like put some more good into the world while doing something you want to do at the same time. So it was a great time. I couldn't recommend it enough. My only regret is that we didn't stay longer, honestly.
Yeah. So where in Ireland was this?
Oh, we were in the middle of nowhere. So we were about north of Waterford.
Okay. Yeah.
A town called Killarney, near Killarney. Like, that was the biggest town closest to us.
Oh my God. I love Killarney.
Yeah.
You were meant to be on the podcast, Nick. I'm going to get all weepy and drink a whiskey.
You know, normally when I say Killarney, everyone's like, Killarney? And I'm like, yeah, Killarney. But yeah, we were close.
I'm sorry. My brain goes to a completely different place than Tracy's. I love Christmas music. I just always have. Mm-hmm. And so I went right to Bing Crosby singing It's Christmas in Killarney.
Oh, okay. See, I don't even know that song. So here you are. You are educating me as always.
I think I've heard it once, if I recall correctly. But yeah, we were on a small town that only had a single bus in and out of it. There were no taxis. The people we had worked on the farm with didn't have a car. And it was closed on Sundays. Mm-hmm. The bus was closed. So there was a one point where we were like, how do we get there? And we kind of had to walk for a bit.
But
it was a great time. Learned a lot. Learned, you know, suddenly I got chased off by a goat at one point. And a lot of other random weird stories about farm life. But it was a great time.
It reminds me a little bit of being in Tennessee, because you could be standing in a gas station in Tennessee. You could see the road you want to get to, and you're asking, like, how do I get to that road? Oh, you can't get there from here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, okay, random weird stories about farm life. This is, like, one of my apex stories of having lived in Ireland, which was, like, forever ago. So I was living in Ireland, going to college there and whatnot. And so every chance that I had, I would nip off with some friends to go backpacking somewhere or to like stay at a hostel, and basically hit up. I mean, there are very few places in Ireland I didn't end up going. So I went to National University of Ireland in Galway, and I would travel from Galway to wherever. And at one point we decided we were going up to Donegal, which for those of you who don't know Ireland, hold out your hand as if you're playing the Michigan game, not because it's shaped like Michigan, but because it gives you a way to visualize. Galway is kind of like the knuckle of your thumb, the top knuckle of your thumb, right on the edge there. It's the westernmost point anywhere in Europe. And if you travel due north from there along the coastline, but before you actually hit Northern Ireland itself, you'll hit Donegal. So anyway, we went up to Donegal, and at one point we had hiked far enough away from like everything that we were just completely exhausted and decided we should hitchhike our way back to our hostel because we're geniuses. And so we put out our thumb, and it took like 4 seconds for us to hitch a ride back, which was sort of wonderful. But the guy could only take us about half the way, and that was fine. It still saved us some legging. So where he let us off was right outside of a pasture land, and the pasture land was covered with sheep, and the sheep were all spray painted different crazy colors. They had stripes of like pink and neon green and purple. And it was like, what's even going on here? They were like punk rock rave sheep happening on this hill. And so before the guy drove away, we were like, hang on a sec. Can you explain the rave sheep to us? And he says, oh, clearly I don't know about how breeding the sheep works. And we're like, clearly we don't. And he explained that apparently sheep from sheep farmers from all the neighboring places around Donegal with adjoining properties would spray paint a single color on their sheep along their underbelly so that when they would mate with another sheep, it would rub off and they could keep track of whose sheep were mating with whose, which basically meant that the ones who looked ultimate rave were really getting all the action. So we ended up having a great time walking past fields of sheep, contemplating what a rip-roaring good time they were having with one another. They were like freaking tie-dyed, these sheep. It was like, wow. Everywhere. It'd be like, is your aim bad? Or like, who? So that's my farming story. Not as good as getting chased by a goat, but more colorful.
That's amazing.
All righty. So, Nick, did Tracy talk to you at all about picks of the week?
I think so. I listened to the podcast, so I'm pretty sure.
All right. Okay.
Because yeah. I think we're going to do picks of the week. Tracy, are you ready to do picks of the week?
I sure am.
Picks of the week.
Alrighty. So, picks of the week, very simple. Just something that you're geeking out about. And Nick, I'm going to put you on the spot because I'm curious, like, what is your pick?
All right. So, my pick's a board game. It's called Treasure Island. And essentially what it is one person takes the role of Long John Silver and you hide a treasure, someone on this very colorful board on Treasure Island, with a dry erase marker. And then the other players, take the role as various pirates, from the classic book and tale and try to find the treasure wherever you're hidden it. And as Long John Silver, you feed them lies and truths and try to redirect them and confuse them until you escape from jail, and then you go searching for the treasure yourself. So it's essentially a race to find the treasure first. And it's a really cool game because you're actually drawing on the board with, like, dry erase markers. Like, you do circles, like, is the treasure here? And you're like, no. And then you have to draw certain mile markers to figure out how quick you can go across the island. It's really fun, and considering I just finished a book that was kind of pirate-ish themed too, and watching Black Sails, it was kind of like just allowed me to geek out more about pirates right now. So I'm loving that.
I am looking it up right now on Board Game Geek, and it is a very pretty game.
It is. It's very wonderful. Pretty.
Fantastic. Like that wreck.
I feel like I've seen that before. I want to say I played that with. Did I play that with Josh Vogt at Superstars? I may have played that once a long time ago.
Looks like pub date was 2018, so
yeah. Don't remember, but it seems familiar.
Yeah, and it's fun.
It seems familiar.
Playing as Long John Silver always kind of gives you this kind of like constant paranoia because you'll see someone getting close to your treasure and you're like, please don't go like two spaces to the left. And at the same time, you get to feed them lies and kind of misdirect them. Yeah. So it's really fun. Is what I'm saying. I like to mess with my friends that I've been able to play with.
That almost kind of reminds me, there's and Tracy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, there's like a genre of those kinds of games where one player is like the hidden player that's working against everybody else kind of thing.
There's a variety of them, like going the Wayback Machine, there's like werewolf and whatnot, but more modern kind of saboteur versions, which sometimes have multiple saboteurs. You've got like Avalon and
Betrayal on the House on the Hill.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah. But also, like, the Treasure Island reminds me a little bit of another favorite I have, which involves a lot of like bluffing and BSing. I really love Sheriff of Nottingham. So if you haven't checked that one out, you should.
That might be the one I played.
Yeah, I think it was one of my picks of the week, like back in the day when I was a guest before I rose through the ranks, beating off all of my rivals.
Is that the one where you pass the badge or something as you're playing?
Yeah, at different times, different people are the sheriff, and everybody's got like a bag of goods to sell at market, and you're trying to get in contraband.
That's the one I played. That's the one.
There you go. Yeah, that's why it seems similar.
Very cool. Tracy, how about you? You got a pick this week?
Yeah, it's actually kind of different from the directions I usually go, but especially because I'm thinking a lot forward to the next year where it looks like I'm going to be teaching probably the entire school year remotely. I've been thinking a lot about what in my environment at home can make me happy that is sort of good and inexpensive. And I realize I have something that I've been using for like a year and a half and it's amazing and everybody needs one of these. You can find it probably lots of different places. I bought mine off of Jeff Bezosaurus's Amazon. It's called Nature Anywhere's Window Birdhouse Feeder. And it's a little plexiglass sort of birdhouse shaped guy with a and it sticks on with suction cups to your window. If you have a first floor window, just stick it outside your window. I have one outside my kids' playroom and one outside our dining room, and it's got a perch on it. And because it's clear, you can see through to the other side, and there's a shelf that you put different types of bird feed on, and the birds will go seriously right there. They don't even care that you're there. And so you get to have a sort of bird watching experience, which is very different and a little bit more intimate, and it makes my cat crazy, which is another reason to, it's like free entertainment for all of us. And so
I remember this.
Yeah, it's really nice. And so it's not expensive. A couple of those and some bird seed will bring some novelty into your COVID life.
I remember maybe television ads for that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was ever like a made for like a QVC type product. It certainly seems like it could have been at some point. And there's the one I use is the Nature Anywhere window bird feed birdhouse thingy, but they make like a dozen different variations. Lots of different places make them.
Yeah. I seem to remember that I remember thinking that was pretty cool. So it's nice to hear that you know, someone actually has one and they work and the birds actually like them.
Oh, they do. And they don't even care that my cat is like right there and even launches himself on the window and brains himself against it like he's a cartoon character. They will still come back because they're like, whatever, there's a force field, he's an idiot. Like, they'll fly away being like, holy crap, what was that? Oh, it's the idiot again. And then they come back. But he's got a wily coyote relationship with it.
But when they come back, it's always, ha ha!
Kinda, yeah.
You can't get me.
When it rains, some of them just like sit inside of it because it's a little bit of shelter, and they just like sit there and munch. And it's sort of funny because it can sit a couple of birds at a time, and you imagine them being like on a date at a drive-in theater. Or maybe this is just me and my weird, lonely COVID brain.
Yeah, anyway. It's funny that you mentioned drive-ins because I don't know if you've like seen that the drive-ins are having a resurgence right now.
Yeah.
Thanks to the pandemic. And someone posted a picture online of a drive-in with their marquee, and it says, "We're really sorry, we only have Star Trek V."
That's amazing. Fantastic. Oh, Patrick, you've just warmed up the crowd, so now you got to do your pick.
My pick, I recently, as with the pandemic stuff, I've kind of been cleaning out my DVR a little bit, and I realized I had a little over two seasons of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. sitting in my DVR. So that was basically the last half of season four, the entire season five, and entire season six to watch. So my pick is actually season five and season six. Mm-hmm. I feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a better show than we give it credit for.
Yeah.
All things considered, it's always kind of been the redheaded stepchild of the Marvel extended universe. I don't even think that Infinity War and Endgame touched it. Mm-hmm. They really used to try to tie things into the movies, like things would happen. I remember Lady Sif. Is it Sif? I think she was on. Sif. She was on there for a little while, and they would have like, you know, when S.H.I.E.L.D. collapsed, that affected the show, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they did anything with Infinity War because they basically they skipped it by sending the entire team into the future.
Is considering that comics do nonsense stuff like that all the time is a totally brilliant move so that the small screen writers can avoid the pitfalls of the big screen writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So season four ends with the entire crew except for Fitz getting kidnapped and sent forward into the future. And then Fitz being Fitz, he basically, he freezes himself so that he can catch them in the future.
So which is just not, hilarious. It's not nearby future is what you're telling me.
No, it's not. They go, into the future and they discover that the Earth was destroyed. And everybody thinks that Daisy did it.
So is this do you think this is some approach that's intended to hook it up to the Eternals, since the Eternals are a sort of not, that they are galactic in scope and scale and not attached to?
I don't think so. They basically did I think it was Kree. It was all Kree, and the Kree, you know, still trying to do things with the Inhumans. But they didn't use that Inhumans team, that stupid show that they did for like a little while.
Yeah.
No, they just took the team into the future. They find out that the Earth was destroyed in the past. Everybody blames Daisy. The human race is basically now a slave to the Kree. And there's just bad things happening. And then season six is you know, obviously things happen. Don't want to be spoilery, but you know, gosh, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. save the world every single season. And then in season six, they have to save the world again from basically alien invaders kind of thing. So they were both good shows. I'm specifically trying not to spoil things. I'm just kind of giving you plots. But it's a better show than it gets credit for, is my point. And I always kind of forget about it. I'll get into it for a little while. I'll watch it. I just think that they've done a lot with that show. I feel like they're almost as handcuffed, if not worsely handcuffed, than the people trying to do Star Wars things. Because the movies have so much more freedom, really, and they're doing lots of really cool things in the movies, and then people keep going, oh yeah, by the way, we got the TV show. What are we going to do with the TV show? Kind of thing. So yeah. It's not, they don't go crazy. They don't just say fuck it, like DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which basically a few seasons back said, look, we know that no one gives a shit about us, so we're just gonna do whatever the hell we want moving forward. Giant Bebo stuffed animal demon possessed things destroying the world, yeah, we're doing that. They don't go that far, but they do have fun with it, you can tell.
Yeah.
So now they're in season seven. It's a limited season, just to kind of wrap up the show. Mm-hmm. And from what I've read about it, season seven is they are definitely doing time travel, trying to fight some time traveling people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That should be interesting. So that's my pick this week. Nick, as far as like how do you want to describe your book in a different way than you did earlier to try to pull readers in to get into it and pick it up?
So
you gave the elevator pitch before.
Yeah.
Right. So now let's get into it a little bit. Like what about this is going to appeal to people?
So I think that the big things that appeal to people is that, I actually designed this series in reverse. So I know where I'm ending. And the first book was actually the last thing I came up with. So all the characters and things I've created are pretty well kind of foreshadowed what's going to happen to them.
Nice.
So I'm like, all right, I got a clear trajectory and I'm doing great. It's also got a lot of cool elements. Things like I have a shattered moon. That's the cover for the US, is just this giant shattered moon that pieces rain down from the sky at certain intervals and like wreak havoc upon the city below. And it's got these really kind of cool of like, memories cost magic, and my main character is incredibly unreliable. It's from the first page you find out he's very unreliable for various reasons, and how that affects his kind of discovery and growth. I think the big elevator pitch is that my series goes from like a boy to a man to a hero to a legend to a myth and so on and so forth. And I didn't really shy away from the boy aspect of that. My main character is incredibly immature at times. But I'm was happy that I was allowed to do kind of his like personal growth, to show how someone who is kind of rather obnoxious, kind of self-centered at times, really kind of like comes into his own and becomes a better person, and helps kind of want to like enact change around him.
Well, our listeners have zero experience with someone being incredibly immature. I'll tell you that right now.
Now, I want to unpack with you for a minute, Nick, because I always get excited when people start talking about the nooks and crannies of their book, and I get the impression that like, these are the pieces of their book that get them excited. And it sounds to me like you're excited about the fact that you get to spend time with a character other people might call unlikable or might think of as unlikable. And I want to hear more about that. Like, what about the complicated messiness of writing the character is so appealing?
Yeah. So I love unlikable characters. My partner gives me kind of a really big hassle about this, because when Game of Thrones started, my favorite character was Jaime Lannister. the moment he arrived on screen, it was like, I really like this guy. And she was like, what are you talking about? He's literally a terrible person. I'm like, no, but I think he's interesting. So I really like these characters that always seem unlikable. And as the show and books progress and people are like, oh, I really like Jamie Lannister. And I'm like, ha, I was here first.
You're just catching up to me, you peasant.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I called it day one. But yeah, I like characters that have, that do start unlikable and have these kind of really interesting arcs and like how they find like a kind of a better place in the world and so on. Like, Prince Zuko, Azuko from Avatar Last Airbender is a great example, because I love his trajectory as just a character. So when I was creating the series, I really wanted to kind of enact what I saw in all these books and TV shows and series that I loved about how these characters kind of mature and how they change. And I didn't want my main character ever be recognizable from the day he arrived in the, like, on page on the first book. So, and one of the things I was really kind of digging deep into in this book is that maturity is kind of a weird thing when you're growing up, is that when I was younger, I thought I was really mature. Like when I was like 16, 15, I'm like, I am so mature. I was not mature. but I think we kind of sometimes think, because the moment you hit 18, it's like, congratulations, you're mature now. That's it. So when I was creating my main character, Michael, I purposely made him 18 because I didn't want to shy away from the things that, like, he thinks he's mature. He thinks he knows what's going on. And as the story progresses, he realizes he's kind of very ignorant about a lot of things going on around him. He doesn't really know what the world stage is. He's kind of self-obsessed with things he thinks is important. And he learned that, like, I need to show and do and act differently. I can't just be this someone who's self-centered on this thing. And to me, that's really exciting. Like, I like these personal growths of characters and how they change around them.
No, I think that's an amazing and important thing to bear in mind as a writer and as a reader. And I know that some of the more frustrating feedback I've gotten from readers or editors or other people is, I really liked X and Y about what you created, but this character that I'm spending time with just isn't likable. Yeah. And I feel like oftentimes that's missing the point. Like, you don't have to like them. You have to find them interesting. If what you mean is you don't find them interesting, tell me that. But don't tell me that your ability to engage with a text is based on everybody being your best friend or being your buddy within it. Because that, when we get to see characters develop and change in the course of a story, it's exciting not just because of what you're seeing in the story, but because we tell ourselves stories because we want to believe certain things can be true about the world. Like, we want to believe certain things can be true about us. So I want to see characters change because, oh crap, if I don't do some changing and growing myself as a person, that's going to be an issue. And I think it's something that gives us an opportunity to address, to just address the way people are more authentically.
Yeah, I agree completely. I 100% agree. It's just, I think it sometimes is hard to engage with a text when somebody's like, I hate this person. But I think one of the things that really made me grow as kind of a writer was when I was able to separate my feelings from a character being like, I hate this person or I hate this thing, and was able to look at kind of like, oh, I get what the writer was trying to do here. I may have disagreed with some aspects of how they did it, but I like looking at what they were going for and what they were trying to, like, show or say about people, societies, or places and things. And to me, that was something I wanted to do in my own writing, where I don't want to, like, show someone, oh, you have to start out good to end up good. I want to show, like, how you can kind of be wrong for a bit, or you can be self-centered, obnoxious, or these things that are kind of negative traits, and you can grow from those things.
Well, you want to. I mean, yeah. you hope that the character is going to grow, right? And that's part of the process with the having the reader go through that with you, is the reader's hoping that this person's going to go, oh, I really fucked up.
Yeah.
I need to be better than that. And Tracy, you and I talked about this before. It's the Kate Elliott thing, right? Where I tell Kate Elliott, your character's made really bad decisions and it frustrated me so much. And she's just laughing maniacally. Yes, yes, exactly.
Dance, emotional puppet, dance. No, for sure. Gosh, I feel like we might need to have you back another time, Nick, so we can unpack some other stuff about your book, like the idea of the economy of magic being related to one's memories, and of course how that feeds into how the book itself would be narrated, and just there are a lot of angles here, and I think it's a super exciting debut. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love talking about all these kind of things, so I'd be happy to come back if you wanted me.
And the book is out now, right?
It just came out in physical format, so it's available pretty much anywhere.
So tell awesome. The people of our functional nerd world where to find you if we're looking for you on the interwebs and all else.
Yeah, you can find me at nickmartell.com, or you can find me at macmartell on Twitter. On Instagram, I'm nickmartellofficial, so I'm pretty easy to find.
Excellent. And are you going to be doing any, I know you're doing obviously this show, are you doing any virtual cons? You know, a lot of cons are going virtual right now. Are you doing any sort of book tour virtually or otherwise?
Not really at this moment. I'm looking into hopefully doing maybe World Fantasy virtual, but a lot of things kind of up in the air right now. So I'm just kind of trying to hope to like figure out what I'm doing next.
Well, and Tracy and I were talking about it on a Patreon only podcast that we did. I, you know, just to throw out some advice there for you, with so many conventions across the world really going virtual, that opens up the possibilities for you to be quote unquote at more conventions.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm gonna have to look into that.
Alrighty. So, any kind of final thoughts that you want to tell our listeners, Nick?
Nope, covers for book two come out soon. My book two has already been handed in, so it's coming out next year. So I'm in a good place, and hopefully people enjoy the story.
And for those of you who are series shy, the man has already told you he plotted this from the end forwards or the end backwards. So he knows where he's going. He's not going to let you down.
Yeah. And the flip side of that is, read this or else.
Yes, like
he might decide just not to tell you the end.
Ooh. Nefarious. Thanks so much for joining us, Nick. It's been awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Functional Nerds Podcast. If you're looking for other great podcasts to listen to, I recommend Beyond the Trope. They premiere new nerdy episodes every week. Giles and Michelle have piled up over 7 years worth of interviews with best-selling authors, award-winning actors, and other leaders in the creative community. And even though, I mean, they've sincerely disappointed me by not coordinating a meet and greet with every dog they know, their Patreon supporters and fans love them for keeping their weekly episodes short, sweet, and full of laughs. Check them out over at beyondthetrope.com. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a backer of the show over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have all new levels with some fantastic rewards like access to our patrons-only Facebook group, exclusive extra shows and content like the new video podcast, Just 10 Minutes, book giveaways, yep, we're giving away books, and even short story critiques provided by Tracy every month. If any of that sounds good to you, again, visit patreon.com/functionalnerds. This podcast is copyrighted by the Functional Nerds, under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. To learn more about the Functional Nerds, visit functionalnerds.com.